Mr. Harris, would you? We will skip the TMDL item as previously discussed. So, would you please introduce item 11?
Item 11, an update on our CCAMP GAP program. Matt Keeling will provide an update of nitrate groundwater quality conditions in the region based on evaluation of recently collected data from a number of sources. This is an information item. Matt?
There we go. Is your mic down? Only if I don't know. Oh, there we go. Technical difficulties. If let me dim the light so we can see the presentation. And before I get started, I'd like to recognize some other staff in our office that did a lot of the heavy lifting associated with the data that's in this staff report. In particular, Erwin Wyatt Marr and Larry Harlan did a lot in the way of downloading the data and comprising the database that we used. And then our student, Shelby Coel, who did a lot of, or most, if not all of the statistical analyses that were included within the data in the staff report. And basically, I just dressed it up and put some lipstick on it, and I'm bringing it to you today. So I'll make sure they get credit for that. We've got a lot more water quality data than we've had in some time with respect to nitrate. The staff report, we've got background information about the different data sources that we evaluated. We've outlined some of what we're calling the key water quality findings. But the staff report itself mostly consists of figures and maps showing the spatial distribution of the data, as well as tabular summaries of the statistics for these water quality data, broken down by region, county institutional boundaries, and groundwater basin and sub-basins, and those tables are in the back of the report. I wanted to point out a couple things about the statistical approach that we applied to these data sets. Some of the data in particular associated with the public water system supply wells and the data that's collected as part of the ag order compliance monitoring, most of those wells, if not all of them, were sampled more than once during the period that we evaluated. And so what we did is we looked at the maximum concentrations and we used those for our statistics. And we did that because there's a tendency to see wide fluctuations in nitrate concentrations in a well associated with pumping influences of adjacent wells as well as the well itself. And so on any given day that someone is drinking water from a well, the nitrate concentration could be high or low one day to the next. So we wanted to look at it from the perspective of a public health mindset and kind of a worst case risk scenario. And so that's why we did that. The data is also being presented as a total nitrogen basis. And this is because some of the sampling data for the wells is reported or analyzed and reported as nitrate. In some cases, it's reported as nitrogen. And because of how the ag order groundwater monitoring compliance requirements are, there was an option to sample and test for nitrate or to sample and test for nitrate plus nitrite. And so when you do nitrate plus nitrite, you can only report that on a as total nitrogen basis. So all the data that we evaluated, we converted to a as total nitrogen basis. And with respect to the drinking water standard, that would be relevant to the federal standard of 10 milligrams per liter as nitrogen, for the maximum contaminant level for drinking water. I also like to point out there's a supplemental sheet. There was an error that was carried over from the public supply well data of a maximum nitrate concentration in the Cuyama Valley of about 173 milligrams per liter. That was actually an error data point that was carried over from the state's drinking water database. The maximum regional concentration is actually in the 60, I think it was 66 milligrams per liter is nitrogen. So in the supplemental sheet, it points out where the corrections are, and we've provided replacement pages, figures, and tables that adjust the statistics throughout the staff report. And it doesn't really result in much in the way of significant changes.
Matt, yes. Just one point. I see the correction on page 4, but the following statement, over 17 times the drinking water standard, that would then be reduced
six.
To 6 times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Johnson also pointed that out as well, and I was going to make a note for that, but thank you for reminding me. The data sources that we looked at, we looked at the last 2 years' worth of public water system supply well data. And again, what Kurt was talking about today, these are wells that are associated with larger municipal and privately owned water systems. And there were 1,165 wells for which we evaluated nitrate data for those. We also looked at domestic wells. And this is where we've really made significant gains in the amount of data that we have in our region with respect to domestic wells. In the last 2 to 4 years, we've gotten data for 1,627 wells throughout the region, and that's comprised of 3 different data sets. The first is data that we collected as part of our groundwater assessment and protection program, domestic well project that was implemented by the United States Geological Survey in coordination with the State Board's groundwater ambient monitoring assessment work that they were doing in the Salinas area. And so we've got data for 90 wells within the Salinas and the Paro Valleys. Santa Clara Valley Water District now has an ongoing program to sample domestic wells. And in the last couple years, they've sampled 556 domestic wells within the Yaugas subbasin in the Gilroy-Hollister groundwater basin. And that's in the areas of Morgan Hill and Gilroy. And they were nice enough to share those data with us. All the other data we were able to download off of the state's GeoTracker database. Now the ag order compliance monitoring requirements, we now have data for 902 on-farm domestic wells. We also looked at those. And then also part of the ag order compliance monitoring, we have data for 1,693 irrigation supply wells. And again, these are data that have been collected over the last 2 to 4 years. This is just a kind of a visual summary of the different data sets, just to see kind of the difference in the number of wells. And throughout the staff, throughout my presentation, we'll be using similar color coding scenarios here, where green will represent non-detect concentrations. So these are where they do not detect any quantifiable level of nitrate. And then yellow represents quantifiable concentrations up to half of the drinking water standard. Orange is representative of concentrations from between half of the drinking water standard to the drinking water standard. And anything that is red would be a nitrate concentration that is above the drinking water standard, and as I mentioned before, this would be with respect to the federal standard of 10 milligrams per liter, which is as nitrogen, which is functionally equivalent to the state's drinking water standard of 45 milligrams per liter as nitrate. And so public water system supply wells, and this is just kind of give you a relative perspective on the number of public supply wells within our region. And then each of the numbers within the colored areas represents the number of wells that fall within those concentration ranges. You know, in the Yaugas subbasin, they've sampled, you know, roughly about half of what we would have with respect to public water supply wells. But there's a lot more of them that have not been sampled in this area. The smallest of the data sets we're looking at is from our GAP program, ag order domestic wells here. The largest data set that we currently have with respect to nitrate is associated with irrigation supply wells that have been sampled as part of our compliance monitoring for the ag order. Now we've got the key water quality findings that are outlined in the staff report. I think it starts on page 2 or 3, and I'll just go through these really quick. On a regional basis, about 7.4% of the public water system wells within our region are polluted with nitrate. When I say polluted with nitrate, that would be exceeding the drinking water standard. So I'll use that term throughout the rest of the presentation. One of the things that I would point out that's not in here is that we kind of did a little regressional analysis over the last 35 years of data, and there are approximately 200 public supply wells that have likely been taken out of service in the last 35 years due to nitrate pollution based on that more historical analysis. Of all the domestic wells that were sampled over the last 2 to 4 years, 27.5% of those are polluted with nitrate. And I just like to point out that with respect, and that's for 454 domestic wells that are currently polluted with nitrate based on the data that we have. And of those total wells, that really only represents about 3.7% of the total estimated number of domestic wells within our region. So there's a considerable number of additional wells, approximately about 42,000 of them, domestic wells within our region that we currently do not have data for. Of the irrigation supply wells that were sampled for the ag order, 24.6% of them are polluted with nitrate. There's 417 of those. For all the data sets, the maximum nitrate concentrations were in the range of 6 to 13 times the drinking water standard. And we're finding, and these are the regional percentages and numbers. Now, as you drill down and focus the analyses on county institutional boundaries, groundwater basins, and sub-basins, the nitrate pollution conditions get really severe in some areas. And so the most severe nitrate pollution we're seeing in Monterey County on a county basis, and on a groundwater basin basis, the Salinas Valley and the Santa Maria River Valley basins are the hardest hit with nitrate. And then for the sub-basins, we're seeing the largest number of wells polluted with nitrate in the Yaugas and Eastside Aquifer sub-basins. And the Eastside Aquifer sub-basin is within the Salinas Valley groundwater basin. Now, when we're looking at these data, it's really important to consider that there are two basic perspectives or context by which I think we should look at these data. And I'm saying this for myself as much as everyone else, because when I was going through my analyses, I found myself kind of getting drawn into the more technical aspects of what the statistics are in the tabular summaries in the back of the report. And those data and those numbers are really important, and we'll be using those as tools for ongoing assessment within our region over time. But really, there's another really important perspective, and that's the human perspective, is that there are people that are drinking this water today, and so it's important to identify where those wells are and who's at risk. And so based on those two different perspectives, I think it requires different actions of us and other agencies to deal with the issues on both sides of these perspectives. So from the human side, there's the public health perspective, and so we need to identify at-risk wells and the at-risk population and to do outreach and education to make sure that those at-risk individuals are notified, and we provide them with tools and information that help them make informed decisions about the safety of their drinking water, and also help us focus on where we should do additional well sampling, and to help us identify the replacement water needs of the communities and individuals within our region. And then on the technical side, it's more of an ongoing and assessment and kind of control and reassess strategy. And this is really, the data in this staff report is really kind of our initial benchmark or baseline moving forward and evaluating nitrate conditions in our region. And so it'll help us identify priority areas and identify the sources so we can take actions to try to effectively reduce the loading and then evaluate trends over time to see whether or not the types of things that we're doing are actually resulting improvements. And obviously we need to kind of keep in mind that in some areas it'll be decades before we may see improving trends. But I'd also like to point out that there are basins and areas in our region where we could see response times in several years. And so we can kind of focus on those to help us identify appropriate tools and methods to deal with the nitrate loading. Next several slides I'm going to go over have the maps for the different data sets showing the spatial distribution of the data. Again, we're using the color concentrations that I talked about before. So the well dots on the map, you know, are color-coded to represent those concentration ranges. And so what I want to do with these is just kind of drill down into the best of the worst of the areas where we're seeing kind of the most significant or severe nitrate pollution problems. And so the pie charts on the right, what they do is we look at this one. This is the region-wide distribution of the percent of wells that fall within each of the nitrate concentration categories. And they're also up here in this table, so you can refer to those with respect to the nitrate concentration. So again, region-wide, like we said, it was about 7% or 7.5% of polluted public water system wells. Now, the next, on a county basis, Monterey County is the worst. We've got about 10% of all the public water system wells in Monterey County are polluted with nitrate. As for the groundwater basins, the Santa Maria River Valley groundwater basin, 20% of the public water system supply wells in that basin are polluted with nitrate. And the east side aquifer, we've got 33% of the public water system supply wells are polluted with nitrate. Now moving on to the domestic wells, we're going to start with the data that was collected as part of the GAP program, Domestic Well Project. This was kind of our initial foray into domestic well sampling for the GAP program. Again, we've got a map showing the study area, and it consisted of the Pajaro and the Salinas Valleys areas, or groundwater basins. And of the 90 wells that were sampled as part of this project, 28 of them, or 31%, exceeded the drinking water standard. Now, these are the data for the Santa Clara Valley Water District ongoing water quality testing program. They sampled, again, 556 wells. 235 of those exceeded the drinking water standard for nitrate, and it's quite a scattering of polluted wells there. And that consisted of 42% of all the wells sampled as part of that program over the last 2 years are polluted with nitrate. One of the things I'd like to point out is that as part of the Santa Clara Valley Water District's program, they were also able to get their board and their they're not their stakeholders, but their fee payers to approve fees to implement an accompanying rebate program for point of use nitrate drinking water treatment system. So it would kind of be like an under the sink treatment system for a tap. And so they are also implementing that as well. These data represent the ag order domestic wells. Again, 902 wells sampled throughout the region. Obviously, there's an emphasis on the location of these wells with respect to agricultural areas, so that have a tendency to potentially skew the data to agricultural land uses. In the region, as I mentioned in the key findings, 20% region-wide of the on-farm domestic wells polluted with nitrate. When you focus in on Monterey County, 46% of all the on-farm domestic wells sampled in Monterey County exceed the drinking water standard for nitrate. Santa Maria River Valley groundwater basin, so it'll be down in this area here, 47% of all the wells sampled in that area are polluted with nitrate. And then the east side aquifer, which is up in here, of the Salinas Valley groundwater basin, 64% of all the on-farm domestic wells in that area are polluted with nitrate. I also like to point out in the tables in the back of the report, you can look at the numbers associated with these different concentration ranges, so you can see the total number of wells sampled as well as how many fall within each of those different concentration ranges. Moving on to the ag order irrigation well data, again, the map showing the spatial distribution with respect to nitrate concentration. Region-wide of the 1,693 irrigation well sampled, 25% exceed the drinking water standard. Santa Clara County up here, which is pretty much consists of the Yaga subbasin, 41% of the irrigation supply wells are polluted with nitrate. Santa Maria, River Valley groundwater basin, considerable number of wells that were sampled in this area. 57% of those exceed the drinking water standard for nitrate or are polluted with nitrate. And again, the east side aquifer, 66% of all the wells sampled in that subbasin are polluted with nitrate. Now, the conclusions that we've got very severe and widespread nitrate pollution of the municipal and domestic supply or MUN beneficial use within our region. I think this is fairly unprecedented level of beneficial use impairment in the state based on data that I've seen statewide. And really, I think what is important about the data is that historically we've been able to evaluate the municipal kind of side of that beneficial use, but we haven't been able to address that domestic supply portion that's associated with domestic wells serving individual residences. And again, I'd like to point out there's about 44,000 of those wells that are estimated throughout our region. They are potentially at risk of nitrate pollution. So I think it's important that we continue our domestic well sampling efforts to get a better handle on that. And as I pointed out, as you kind of focus down into various geographic areas, the nitrate pollution conditions tend to get more severe. Until we can get the nitrate loading reduced and start seeing improved water quality conditions in these basins, the health risks and the societal costs associated with dealing with these drinking water programs are going to continue to increase. And if there's any questions?
I do have two speaker cards and on that topic, so I would have liked to get these two speaker cards covered, and then we can have the questions. So 3 minutes for Kay Mercer. Your withdrawal. And I had a 2 minute request for Claire Weinman.
I just wanted to point out that for the speakers, you can also see your time right there.
Great, thank you.
Go ahead, Claire.
Good morning. My name is Claire Weinman. I'm the president of the Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. I know I've got a lot on the agenda today, so I'll be brief. I just wanted to comment on 2 points, well, actually 1 point, really. And that's to express the commitment of the agricultural community to protect drinking water supplies. And more specifically, I'd like to speak to the importance of looking comprehensively at all of the factors influencing this information in the appropriate context. When I was in college, there was this great Dilbert cartoon. I don't know if there's any Dilbert fans out there saying, well, the numbers don't lie, but the assumptions do. And so I just wanted to speak to 2 points that I wanted to convey. First of all, under the ag order domestic well samples, there's a large number of those samples I know personally through my members who sampled shop wells and other wells that aren't necessarily being ingested. So the main point is that not necessarily all of that information that's categorized as domestic well is being ingested. It can be used for hand washing, or there's other cases where the household are using bottled water or other points of treatment. So I wanted to speak to that and speak to the importance of looking that looking at that information in the full picture. And then also just wanted to express, I see that the yellow category was arranged between non-detect and 4.99. And I know that there can be differences in the ways that lab reports information. So technically, even a zero or a one, which could be an environmental baseline, would be considered in that yellow category. So just wanted to speak to the differences. And when you look at the pie chart, that could heavily play in. So thank you for your consideration. And information is emerging, especially through the Groundwater Coalition, looking at that information in context in the full picture. So I encourage you to take that into consideration in receiving this update. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And now I'm open to our board, and perhaps this time, in order to maintain some efficiency, I will start on my right and move to my left. Oh, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt, I just have one question, and that's what the plan is for the bullet with the 97% of untested domestic wells.
All right. Well, right now we're working with the State Water Resources Control Board. We've spent the better part of the last year and a half trying to leverage cleanup and abatement account funds and discretionary funds to implement a region-wide domestic well sampling project. We got approval for funds to do that, and we're currently in the contract and bid document preparation process, and we hope to go out to bid to implement a region-wide domestic well project in the next several months. And then after that, we plan to implement a similar program to what the Santa Clara Valley Water District is doing with our GAP funds, is that we would like to have an ongoing contract or contracts with environmental water quality laboratories in our region where people can go to, call them up and say, I'd like to have my well sampled. And then periodically, we would do some more focused sampling in strategic areas from certain wells to start doing, developing a data set that will allow us to do trend analyses over time.
Great. And then I'd just like to compliment you on the slide that was in the middle that draws reemphasizes the nexus between statistics and empirical data and just the human side of it. It doesn't, of course, always have to be such a cute young girl. Could be a crusty old guy drinking that water, too, and just as important.
We've got one of those.
But that to me, I think we do a poor job of reminding everybody, including us, of that connection all the time. And I think Mark Twain was attributed, but I don't think it was his, but when he was talking about statistics, said lies, damn lies, and statistics. And I agree with Claire's comments that you can take a broad number, 0 to 5 almost, and that maybe those are really should be in a green category rather than a yellow, and that's just an example of how the numbers don't really tell the story of what the nexus is to actual human health, and we need to keep focusing on that. So thank you.
And I'd like to point out, too, part of the reason why we did the color coding the way we did is that that is consistent with the State Board's GAMMA program and how they depict their data on the GeoTracker website. And so we wanted to be able to kind of do an apples-to-apples comparison.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Matt. So with our heavy reliance on groundwater for water supply, I know that there are a number of ways in which the work going ahead is going to be a collaboration across agencies and across different funding sources. One of the developments recently is Assemblyman Alejo's interest in doing a needs assessment or a funding needs assessment research to the level of $500,000. How far do you see that money taking us, and then are there other sources of funding on the horizon?
I was going to address this in my next presentation, but I'll answer the question now. The $500,000 that you mentioned that Alejo got cut is going to go to the Greater Monterey County Integrated Regional Water Management Program to do a needs analysis associated with the drinking water needs of disadvantaged communities. within most of Monterey County, and we've already started to have some preliminary discussions with State Board and some of the local stakeholders and environmental justice groups to participate in the development of the scope of work associated with that. Because we spent a considerable amount of time looking at these issues. And what we're anticipating doing as part of our GAP program funding is to leverage that work and put up some additional funding through GAP to do a region-wide needs analysis for disadvantaged communities within our region, because that's really lacking. And what this really speaks to are the unregulated water systems, the water systems and the wells that Kurt did not talk about today. The systems that are not public water systems. You know, historically, funding for water systems in the state, and as well as the federal programs, they only provide funding to public water systems. And so typically the most at risk and the most in need communities or individuals are the ones that get their water from a state small system, which is a 5 to 14 service connection type system, and then less than that down to the domestic well level. And so in many cases, the funding is not even available to them, and if it is, it's not always accessible because these communities lack the basic institutional capacity, not just to apply for the funds, but if they could even get the funds to actually implement them and to do the ongoing O&M associated with managing those water systems. So that's kind of the big picture approach.
So in other words, the Alejo money is a good start, but do we have an idea of what level of program is going to meet or reach those goals to do those needs assessments? And can you tell us what a needs assessment includes?
Well, I have to say that the $500,000 is going to be a drop in the bucket. And even some other funds I'll talk about later that have been put up to do emergency replacement water supply is going to be a drop in the bucket. Needs analysis is going to be in identifying where the communities are, what their drinking water problems are and what their needs are, and then what are the solutions to address those problems. That's essentially what we mean by a needs analysis. And this is something that's been historically lacking. We've been pushing for this as part of our coordinated efforts with the Governor's Drinking Water Stakeholder Group, comments on the California Water Action Plan, or DWR's California Water Plan, as well as our involvement with the UC Davis report and the recommendations that came out of that as part of the SB X21 bill. Does that answer your question?
Mr. Young.
Thank you, Dr. Wolf. So, Matt, so we have we're missing data on the other portion of the 44,000 wells because they are domestic and small community systems, correct? And I think Mr. Sosa said that, you know, the state isn't tracking those in terms of water quality. But the counties have jurisdiction over being able to require monitoring, sampling, things of that nature. My suggestion would be, to Dr. Wolf, to if he thinks it's appropriate and the rest of the board thinks it's appropriate, to have staff with some periodicity be sending this information to the county public health officers, at least reminding them, letting them know that this is what we're collecting, we're determining a certain percentage of your domestic and small system wells are at risk. Because I don't know that they're getting this information otherwise. We're kind of a clearinghouse for this because we're using it in our program. And I suggest this because the experience that I had in trying to get through to Santa Barbara County was that it's not really a problem that's going to warrant us to make any changes other than just encouraging people to sample their wells. And I would like us to make a concerted effort to be shifting this information to them with some periodicity and recommending that they require periodic water well testing to protect their constituents.
Agreed. And also to be better at sharing of data.
Yeah.
If and when they do collect it.
Exactly. So, Dr. Wolf, I would make that suggestion to you.
All right. And what I'll do is give an opportunity for the rest of our board to ask questions, and then I'll look at the rest of you for a consensus if that is a directive we'd like to give to staff. So, Mayor Delgado.
Thank you, Chair. Matt, in our phone discussions a few days ago during our pre-briefing, you touched on some contractual difficulties getting state getting contracts through the state process. So those contracts that you mentioned 10 minutes ago, can you explain that to me a little bit more about where they're in the process, but are they at risk of not being implemented due to contractual delays?
Yeah, there's a number of issues associated with this. One is that, you know, the state board, they've got the entire state to deal with. And so they fly over at 30,000 feet, and they look at the state from the perspective that, you know, only 39%, the reliance on groundwater statewide is only about 39%. We've got a distinctly different perspective because that's 86%. And so when we apply for funding at the state board level, not only are we competing with all the other regional priorities and the projects that are being proposed to state board, we're also kind of competing with the overall statewide perspective. And so that's one difficulty, and it's often hard to convince them that our priority should be their priority when they've got a distinctly different perspective. And the other issue is associated with just the inherent inefficiencies of the state's current contracting process. There's been a lot of pressure statewide, not just for the water boards, but for all state agencies not to contract out any work that could potentially be done by state agencies or staff. And this is primarily an outcome of Caltrans years past trying to outsource a lot of capital improvement projects associated with transportation. And so the unions have put a lot of pressure on the legislature, and the legislature's put a lot of pressure on DAS and DGS as part of the, you know, the contracting process. So there's a lot more layers of review and oversight associated with initiating those contracts to make them come to fruition.
So
does that answer your question?
Yeah. It gets to it. So does that result in potentially long delays in getting the contracts that are in the hopper that we hope for implemented?
Yeah. Yeah. So as I said, you know, it took us a year and a half just to get approval for funds. And we'd had it approved almost a year ago, but then it got yanked out from under us. And then we kept reapplying for the funds, and it finally came to. And now we are looking at probably about another 6 months until state board will issue the request for bids. And then once that happens, we got to go through the bid review, and then the contracts, that's going to take some time as well. So we're looking at 6 to 8 months before we can get, a contractor lined up to do the work.
Is there any risk of missing deadlines so that the funds go away that were allocated?
Right now the funds are split between the cleanup and abatement account for the field sampling and the analytical work, and then between a discretionary contracts budget for fiscal year 14-15. And that's for the outreach and education component of the project. There's more of a risk associated with those fiscal year 14-15 funds. And sometimes they will extend them over if they haven't been expended within the fiscal year time period. I think we have until the end of 2016 to encumber the discretionary funds for fiscal year 14-15.
Okay, thank you. So my suggestion that we could consider later as a consensus would be that our region somehow tracks the grants that might be at risk of being lost and do what we can to avoid their loss?
Well, we're already doing that. We've been pushing pretty hard, to be quite honest.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
If I could just add, it's the funding, state funding is complicated. I mean, I could sit here for an hour and try to explain the process to you and all the caveats. I will say typically the funding once allocated has a life of about 3 years.
Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like everybody else, I'm a little focused on those other 96.3% of domestic wells. So when it says 42,000 additional households at risk, that's the all of the domestic wells in the region that we don't have data for. Is that correct?
That is the estimated number of domestic wells within the region. That does not include the approximately 2,000 small water systems that are not public water systems. And in Monterey County, there's 970 of those alone. There's systems that serve between 2 and 14 service connections. And we have less accurate estimates of the number of those types of systems in the other counties in our region at this point.
And my guess would be that those would probably be right up there behind the domestic wells in terms of most at risk.
Correct. In Monterey County, I believe it's 140 or 170 of the 970 that are polluted with nitrate. And many of those do not have water treatment associated with them, and those folks are having to drink bottled water.
Yeah, and they don't have the money to make improvements, and they don't have the ability to blend because they don't have multiple wells.
There's no funding programs for them. They don't have the institutional capacity to even if you gave them a treatment system today, and it's much like what Kurt was talking about today, but the economy of scale is so much lower that their institutional capacity issues are even worse.
Now, do we have, one of the things I'm most curious to see coming out of this groundwater coalition is the contour maps the concept is they should show us the geographic locations where domestic wells ought to be at risk. Do we have a sense of the geographic distribution of those 42,000 unmonitored domestic wells? I'm guessing that they're pretty much all not urban, and that some of them are going to be in ag areas, and some of them are simply going to be off in the mountains of Big Sur. Do we have a sense of their distribution, or just a big number estimate?
We currently don't have a sense of their distribution, but one of the things we are doing is we're doing a parcel scale analysis in GIS to try to identify parcels that we believe have improvements consistent with a single family dwelling and that are outside of public water system service areas, and you could make a fairly good assumption that there's a domestic well serving that residence. Now, the other thing I want to point out, because this is a really good question, and I meant to make this comment as part of my presentation, is that there are quite perhaps a significant number of domestic wells that are outside of the groundwater basins, that are up in the upland or hard rock areas, that are not within or adjacent to intensive agricultural land use practices. And there's probably different risks, drinking water risks, associated with those wells other than nitrate, unless there are septic system issues. Things like arsenic, radiation, mercury, chromium, more naturally occurring types of pollution.
So do we have any sense of those 42,000, estimated 42,000 wells for which we don't have data, of how many of them are going to be in the agricultural areas, are going to come into the areas covered by these contour maps, even though they may not be tested because they may not be part of a farm?
We don't yet. I can't say the same for the coalition. Maybe they've been able to do some estimates with respect to that, but no.
I doubt if they're doing tracking of the wells that aren't farm related. So, That'd be surprising.
I think the ag order requires of them to identify those ones that are adjacent to known polluted wells and that are potentially at risk, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, and wrapping it up here, a question and a comment. So those state small systems, the systems that are more than one user but below the level that gets regulated, I guess it's 2 to 15. Are we prioritizing them in the same way that we're kind of lumping them in with the domestic wells in terms of what we're trying to get projections and figure out an approach to?
Yeah, there's two things that we're doing. One, with our domestic well project, we are going to make the free voluntary sampling services associated with our GAP domestic well project available to those smaller systems as well, because that'll help us identify where they are and the nitrate conditions. We've done this with Monterey County, and we're going to start kind of pushing out into other areas, is capturing what data we can from the counties with respect to what they know about the number and the location of those smaller water systems so that we can more accurately target them for outreach and sampling, and we can start, you know, mapping out where they are. And we've already kind of done that for Monterey County. On our website, data that we got from the county, we're able to identify the parcels served by those systems, and we kind of color-coded the parcels based on the nitrate concentrations of the wells serving those parcels, but we still don't know where the wells are. And what we would like to do is provide funding in coordination with the county to go out and survey the location of those wells so that we could do similar types of maps that we showed here.
Thank you. And just one comment, Mr. Chair, in terms of consensus. The Mr. Young's comment about periodically sending information to the county public health officers about the small system and domestic wells. My recollection is we did that about a year and a half ago, and it was like dropping the penny in the well. Not in every case, but in many of the cases, we never heard it hit the bottom. I would just suggest that besides periodically updating the county public health officers, that there be a press component to that, where we as we develop more information, and I see the state board does this quite a bit, we do it less, that we put that out in the press in a manner that's meaningful to local residents and that doesn't simply point the finger at county health officers that we have to work with. But that maybe creates some political pressure in those counties that are working with the same kind of limited resources that we are to make this a higher priority issue, that we just focus a little on the press component of that as we do it.
I'd like to add another layer to that, and this is something that we've been actively doing and is part of the transfer of the drinking water program over to state board. We've been trying to educate state board staff and exec staff about this issue and saying this is a huge shortfall on our public health safety net with respect to drinking water. You know, we may only be talking about 2% of the population statewide, but it's a significant number of people. You're talking about millions of people that are at risk. And so we're trying to get them to consider better data capture and assessment associated with these systems as part of the new drinking water program, and not just kind of bring over the public water system mindset, along with the drinking water program. And I think we've made some traction with some state board staff about, helping them understand the significance of this issue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll be brief. Mr. Johnson covered part of the items I was going to talk about. And to my colleague, I'm probably the crusty old guy that you could use as the demonstration. I've been drinking water for many decades in the Salinas Valley. You could probably turn the lights out and I probably will glow. But besides all little joking around that we're doing, but Matt, on the, have you any information on the depth of the wells or that have been sampled, or are they shallow wells? Do you know if there's cross-contamination between septic tanks and domestic wells or potable wells, especially on ranches and farms and other small areas? And do you have any information on perforation of wells from one aquifer to the other, because there are several? And old wells, back in the early days, they dug them, and there's perforations from the top to the bottom. And it could be cross-contamination from those type of things. I know the Monterey County Water, Monterey County Health Department has a lot of information on small domestic well systems. And also the Monterey County Water Resources Agency has new wells that have been dug probably in the last 40 years in Monterey County. Are you tapping into that information? I mean, I know you probably are trying to.
I'm trying to see if I can do these in reverse order. I'm not aware that Monterey County Health Department or their well permitting departments or the Water Resource Agency has a significant amount of data associated with domestic wells. What they have in many cases are volumes and volumes of historical paper files. Through some of our outreach efforts to them years ago about the nitrate problem, one of the things that Monterey County did do as part of their county plan update is they did include a new ordinance that required that all new domestic wells, permits, they required nitrate sampling, and that was something that didn't happen historically, and that's just over the last couple years. And this is something that we need to follow up with them and see how many new wells have been sampled and where they are and what the nitrate concentrations are. With respect to cross-contamination septic systems, there is a potential to have septic system influences. Those typically occur in areas where you have high septic system densities. The areas that would come into mind would be kind of the Langley areas down, south of Salinas on your way going to Monterey, as well as the North County areas up in Prunedale. As far as our, the availability of information with respect to the construction details of wells, how deep they are, where the perforations are. Statewide, there are an estimated 700,000 well completion reports for wells throughout the state. In our region, there's probably, I don't know how many, tens of thousands for our region. They're available to us, but trying to link those well completion reports in either a paper or a PDF or a TIFF format to a well on the ground is extremely difficult. In many cases, it's akin to trying to find a needle in a haystack. This is something that we have identified as an ongoing task, and I intend to do kind of a pilot with the 90 wells that we have for the GAP domestic well sampling, is try to find the well completion reports associated with those wells and link them up and start to create a database with respect to, the construction details of those wells. We can make some very basic assumptions about the wells. Domestic wells are typically fairly shallow, don't usually have long screen intervals. Public supply wells, typically deeper with discrete perforations within zones that will provide one, a high level of production or flow, but also avoid pollution. And that's why I think when you look at the public supply well data, you need to realize that, well, those numbers aren't as bad because those wells are placed at depths and locations to avoid pollution, and then once they do become polluted, they tend to fall off the map. Agricultural wells, that's really the open-ended scenario. Typically, those could have screen intervals that span multiple aquifers at great depths. And they could be pulling water from zones that have low nitrate concentrations to in zones that don't. And, you know, there is a potential, I think, for more cross-contamination with those older historical agricultural wells.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I will give some of my input and then look at these suggestions made by or my fellow board members. One comment is that I do think, and this is comment directed to staff, is that with the implementation of the ag order and groundwater monitoring, both individual and cooperative, I think we're just seeing the beginning of information. So what I'm saying is that statistically, we're going to be able to get more and more good information at hand. So what we're seeing here, to some extent, is a little bit the tip of the iceberg of more reliable data coming. You know, the second is a comment. We tend to, rightfully so, you know, express concerns about disadvantaged communities. But we do have within the Central Coast a lot of rural single-family dwellings that rely on a domestic well. And these are not necessarily individuals who fall in these categories, demographics that I have described. So I think there is an issue also of educational campaign that gets a little bit into what Mr. Johnston suggested, to make those folks realize also, well, don't take your water for granted. So I would suggest that in terms of how can we communicate with the community at large, maybe because now we have the drinking water division also under the State Water Board, we could tap on their shoulder and say, hey, how do you suggest that more effectively we communicate with the county? Because I would assume that, you know, they do communicate regularly with the county, including the 30 districts, which I guess are delegated to the county's responsibility. So we could learn from what they have done rather than our own, you know, trying to develop a program. So that would be one suggestion I make. The other one, I certainly concur with the suggestion of Mr. Young that we should communicate this information to the counties. It is an eye opener, and then also this address the suggestion of Mr. Johnston relating to press release by trying to collaborate with the new drinking water division. I think it would add a lot more weight to the effort. Last input is that I think because the state increasingly recognized the issues we have with groundwater, and indirectly, I think the drought has brought that further into realization because, you know, when we talk about water quality, the worst level of water quality is when your well runs dry, in a sense. So I think there's a heightened recognition of the needs there, and I would think that there will be more opportunities available from state and even the federal government on grants, and some of the restrictions perhaps will be revisited a little bit because of this heightened, you know, recognition of the needs that we have. So do we have a consensus from my fellow board members to approach both the press release and trying to collaborate with a new drinking water division, and two, to provide on a regular basis updates to the counties. So I see a consensus here, and so Mr. Harris, if you can memorialize that as a direction to staff, and then staff can, you know, come back if necessary at the next meeting if you have some refinements and further questions.
So I'll just read a statement for the record in terms of your direction.
Without the French accent.
Without the French accent.
Thank you.
Staff will send gap assessment information updates to county health officials every, that's to be determined, Staff will do a press release in coordination with DDW staff with each gap update to county health officers.
Yeah, and I left the frequency open because I'm personally, I don't think we know if every quarter, every 6 months, every year. I think it would tie to the newness of information that you would have. So that's where, you know, staff needs to give some input. All right, so that will be our action step. So this should conclude this agenda item.